I really appreciate your attention this morning as we spoke about God's desire to dwell with His people and the way He has desired that all throughout history. This evening I'd like to talk about sacrifices, both from the Old and the New Testament. When I was younger, I thought the book of Leviticus was incredibly boring. In fact, there were a lot of occasions that I couldn't sleep at night, and so I would pull out my Bible and start reading Leviticus because it was so repetitive I would get so bored and I would eventually go to sleep. And I never appreciated it at all. I didn't understand what it was talking about because it didn't apply to me at all. And so it was so hard for me to get a grasp on Leviticus or to even be interested in Leviticus. That said, I now have a much greater appreciation for the book of Leviticus than I used to have, because I've recently been in a study with some people on the law of Moses, and the teacher that I have has brought out some really interesting points about the law and its connection with Christ. And how the law really, really introduces, really allows you to know better the lawgiver. And so this afternoon, I don't think I've ever said that in a sermon. This afternoon, I want to talk about several of the sacrifices that were given in Leviticus. I'm going to do an overview of four of the main sacrifices. And then we can look at it and how it helps us know the lawgiver better and how it applies to us as followers of Christ, who we don't give any of these sacrifices, but there is a sense in which they are very real to us. So this afternoon, I want to talk about the burnt offering and the burnt offering and the peace offering, the sin offering, and then the guilt offering. Once I've talked about those, really we'll just talk about how they were offered, each of them. And then once we've talked about those, we'll see what we find in connection with those and Christ's sacrifice in the New Testament. First of all, the burnt offering is laid out in Exodus chapter 29. And it has some interesting things about it. The worshiper was to present the offering, was to present the animal to the priest. Once he goes to the priest with this animal, the worshiper is also to lay his hands on the animal's head and then to slaughter the animal while his hands are on the head. After that, the priest would take the blood from the animal and sprinkle it on parts of the altar, parts of the temple, and then they would cut up the animal, the worshiper would. The priest would arrange the animal on the altar. Worshiper would wash the animal's legs, and then they would offer the animal on the altar. The unique thing about the thing that makes the burnt offering unique from the other offerings is that it was completely burned. The animal was totally burned on the altar. There was none of it left. None of it was to be eaten by the worshiper or the priest. It was to be totally burned on the altar. And it's been suggested, there have been several things suggested that could signify to us. Probably the one that makes the most sense to me is that total burning of the animal on the altar would signify to me total dedication to God. That this animal that you've raised, that has been part of your livestock for years, you now take it and you put your hand on the animal's head and kill it. And then the thing is entirely burned to God would show me that I'm supposed to be living my life totally dedicated to God. Then in Leviticus chapter 3, we see the peace offering. With the peace offering, the worshiper would present his animal to the priest. And in the same way, he would lay his hands on the animal's head and then kill the animal. Again, we also see this blood ritual where the priest sprinkles blood on different parts of the temple and different parts of the altar. And then the thing that's interesting about this is that they offer the fat of the animal on the altar. In this law, they weren't allowed to eat the fat parts of the animal. They weren't allowed to eat the fat around the intestines or around the liver. And they weren't allowed to eat the tail of the animal. Things that we would consider gross were really the prized parts of the animals then. And they weren't allowed to eat those parts. Those parts were offered on the altar to God. And then the worshiper in this situation partakes of the meat of the altar, of the offering. The worshiper gets to take the meat that wasn't offered on the altar, and he gets to partake of that as a symbol of communion with God, as a symbol of fellowship with God. And there are different kinds of peace offerings. There's the thanksgiving offering, the free will offering, and one other that I can't remember off the top of my head. And the three different kinds of offerings they're all peace offerings, and the worshiper partakes of all of these different offerings. And the biggest part of this offering is the fellowship with God. The other one is the vow. When someone takes a vow, they can offer this peace offering to seal the vow, to seal the covenant that they're making with God. And then the sin offering in Leviticus chapter 4. This one is interesting because it differs based on the status of the person in society. The priest would offer the sacrifice in a slightly different way than he would offer the sacrifice for a leader of the people, which is also different from offering the sacrifice for an entire congregation, which is even more different from offering the sacrifice for just an individual that has no rank in society. So the sin offering for a priest had to be a bull without defect. And he would also put his hands on the animal and kill it and then sprinkle the blood. This time with the sin offering, if it was for the priest or for the entire congregation, parts of the blood would even go inside the temple into the holy place and be sprinkled on the altar of incense there inside the temple. And then he would offer the fat parts of the animal on the altar, just as in the peace offering. But in the sin offering, you are not allowed to eat any part of the offering. The rest of the animal had to be offered in fire outside the camp. This comes into play, we'll see later in Hebrews, when it talks about the blood being taken into the temple and not being able to partake of the meat that goes with the offering, where the blood from that offering goes inside the temple. And so because the priests and the leaders, because the blood from their offerings had to go inside the temple, they weren't allowed to partake of any of the meat from that offering. The rest of the offering had to be taken outside the camp and burned. And the guilt offering is actually very similar to the sin offering. So I'll just go ahead and put the entire thing up here with the guilt offering. With the guilt offering, they would slaughter the animal, do the blood ritual, offer the fat, and the priest was able to eat it. The guilt offering was basically the same thing as the sin offering, except the priest could partake of this offering, and the fact that they also had to add a fifth of the worth of the animal. So they would have to appraise the worth of the animal and say, okay, it's worth this many dollars, so now take a fifth of that and add it as a fine for whatever you had committed. The significance of that to the worshiper would have been the price of sin. Not only do they lose this animal that they're having to offer as the sacrifice, but they also have to pay a 20% fine on top of that for whatever they had done wrong. So those are the four types of sacrifices that we see in the book of Leviticus, along with a bit of the mentality that you can see behind what would the purpose of this sacrifice be. Like I said, for the burnt offering, it would have been to show total dedication to God. For the peace offering, it would have been to show fellowship with God or to signify the sealing of a covenant with Him. And the sin and the guilt offering would have been to make an example for the price that they have to pay for sin. But then we have Christ's sacrifice in the New Testament. And this is a really important part because without this, the Old Testament sacrifices really don't mean a whole lot. I mean, the meanings that I gave to them, that is a big thing, but what's the point in God giving these sacrifices if they don't foreshadow anything? It's interesting. In 1 Peter 1 and verse 19, Jesus is said to be the animal or the offering without defect. If you will turn with me there. 1 Peter chapter 1. I'm going to begin in verse 17. And if you call on Him as Father who judges impartially according to each one's deeds, conduct yourselves with fear throughout this time of your exile, knowing that you are ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. One thing that was true of all of these sacrifices that we've discussed, all four of these sacrifices, require that the animal be without spot or blemish. And here, Peter gives that same phrase in reference to Christ, that he offered his blood as a ransom for us. This Jesus, who was like a lamb, without spot or blemish. They also, in all of the sacrifices, the worshiper had to lay their hands on the animal, on the head of the animal, before they killed it, or as they were killing it, in order to feel the life draining out of that animal. It's very interesting, something that I have overlooked for years, but in Matthew 26 and verse 50, Matthew records, Jesus said to him, "Friend, what do you do what you come to do?" They came up and laid hands on Jesus and seized him. Now, granted, that is a common phrase used in the New Testament, that you lay hands on someone. But it seems to me, with this background of the sacrifices in the Old Testament, and with every single one of them the worshipers having to lay hands on the animal before killing it, it seems to me that this really is a fulfillment of the prophecies set forth by the sacrifices of the Old Testament. That they really foreshadowed Christ's death in this way, as well as in many others. And then they had to slaughter the animal in all of them, which we see with Christ on the cross, with his last statement being, "It is finished. My sacrifice is now given. It is finished. I'm going to be with my Father." And this was to be done in the case of the sin offering. It was to be burned, the rest of the animal was to be burned outside the city. If you will, turn with me to Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13, or the entire book of Hebrews, is where this group of Jewish Christians have come and become Christians from Judaism. And they're being persecuted and they're having a hard time with things. And so they're getting to the point where they're discouraged and they're just not wanting to continue being Christians because of the way they're being treated in society. And so the author of Hebrews comes in and he shows in several different ways throughout the book why Christ is better than what they had under the old law. For instance, why Christ is better than the angels, which they valued very highly. Why Christ is better than the high priest. And here, he's explaining why Christ is better than the sacrifices they had. And in this section, he talks about how they had to offer sacrifices year after year to atone for their sins. Then in verses 12 and 13, he ties in Christ's sacrifice with one of the specific sacrifices that they're used to offering. Verses 12 and 13, he says, "So Jesus also suffered outside the gate in order to sanctify the people through his own blood. Therefore, let us go to him outside the camp and bear the reproach he endured." Christ, just like the sin offering, was offered outside the gate of the city. And then finally, he's like the peace offering in that we get to partake. In the peace offering, the worshiper would get to eat a portion of the animal as a seal of his covenant with God or as a seal of his fellowship with God. And in Matthew 26, Christ sets forth the Lord's Supper as a new part of their worship to him. And as he's doing this, he says to his apostles, beginning in verse 26, "Now as they were eating, Jesus took bread and after blessing it, broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body.' And he took the cup and he had given thanks and gave it to them and said, 'Drink it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the transgressions of sins.'" Christ is our peace offering as well. He is the one that seals our covenant with God every week as we partake of his body and his blood here in the memorial. So, having said all that, again, I'd like to invite you to think about the old law and how it applies to us. Christ, God wanted to give the Jews of that time a foreshadowing of what Christ was going to be. They had heard prophecies all throughout their history of this Messiah that was going to come and save them. And so, as I've heard someone say before, any list of Old Testament prophecies that foreshadowed Christ is too short unless it includes the entire Old Testament. And this is an example of one of those times. Because you don't think of the sacrifices in the Old Testament being a prophecy. But every one of them has similarities to Christ's sacrifice on the cross. So, Christ, as a burnt offering, totally dedicated himself to God by living a life where he was without spot or blemish and going to the cross to perfectly fulfill the plan that God had made for him from the beginning. So that, as with the peace offering, he could seal our fellowship with God so that in the end, we can dwell with him for eternity And that seal of our fellowship with God also seals our covenant with God. That if we break, we also have to have a sacrifice for that. The sin and guilt offering that we saw in the Old Testament, Christ fulfills that as well. And we see all of that because of the images of the sacrifice, of the sacrifices of the Old Testament that are used throughout the New Testament in reference to Christ's sacrifice. So when we read the Old Testament, let's read it looking forward to Christ, seeing what things in the Old Testament apply to Christ in the New Testament, which will help us understand our God in a deeper way, in a way that we couldn't understand if we didn't have the Old Testament. The Old Testament prophecies and the fact that Christ fulfills them is what gives us faith, is what allows us to know that this is what God has had planned from the beginning, and that He is going to fulfill every promise He has given us. And we see that down even to the sacrifices that they offered in the old law. But the thing is, you can't partake of the benefits of the sacrifice unless you enter into that covenant with the sacrificial animal. So, if you're not a part of God's people, you have to become one. You have to become one of God's people in order to get any benefit out of this sacrifice that He offered. All of these sacrifices are said to have an aspect of forgiving of sin, of atonement for sin. And Christ is the same way. His sacrifice will wash away every sin. So if you need to become part of that covenant with Him, to partake in this sacrifice that we have, in this peace offering that we're able to partake of every Sunday, if you need to do that, and you want to do it publicly, we invite you to come as we stand to sing.